Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This week, we're joined once again by Jack Howard to discuss the thorny issue of whether, in the light of comments recently made by Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola, comic book movies in general and Marvel movies in particular really are cinema. Oh, plot spoiler, they are.
Can we do a little clap for you?
Off we go. Director. The last person I allowed to do that was Martin Scorsese.
Really?
Actually was, yeah.
Wow, well, I mean, we are in a similar league.
Welcome back to Kermode on Film, Jack Howard. As I was just saying, Jack, just because Nick's filming this, there's a Patreon version of this podcast now, which you can get without the adverts and all the rest of it. It's got some visuals. So Jack was doing the hand clap because Jack considers himself to be a young Martin Scorsese. The last time I allowed somebody else to do the hand clap was I was interviewing Martin Scorsese for the re-release of Peeping Tom.
Right.
And we were in BAFTA, and they had two cameras set up, and somebody said, oh, we need a clap. And I said, I'll do it. And Motska says, he went, I think I will. And I was like, yeah, that's fine, you know. So that was it.
Was the quote literally, I think I will?
Yeah, he said, I think I'll do that. And I, wow. I just went, yeah, that's of course you're going to. So he went like
Scorsese.
That, which was great, Mr. Scorsese, sir. You know, however you like it. So anyway, this leads us kind of rather nicely into the theme of today's heated debate, which is something that Martin Scorsese said about comic strip movies, or Marvel movies in particular, and was subsequently followed up by Francis Ford Coppola. So this whole thing began because Martin Scorsese said, fairly innocuously, I think, he was asked what he thought about Marvel movies, and he said that, as far as he was concerned, they were not cinema. And this kind of sparked a relatively heated response in a number of areas of the media. I tweeted, yes, they are, because it just seemed to me to be a foolish thing to say. That has subsequently been accelerated by something that Francis Ford Coppola has said. Let's start with the Scorsese thing. I thought that when Scorsese said the Marvel movies aren't cinema, he went on to say that they aren't for him, that he doesn't get anything out of them, that it was a foolish comment, because I think, much as I admire Martin Scorsese, and, he's made some brilliant movies, not least The Irishman, which I think is really terrific. I think that saying that something which is in cinemas and means so much to a huge swathe of cinema goers, saying that it's not cinema is exactly like your dad when you play a record going,
That's not music.
He's not even playing that.
That's just noise.
Can't tell whether that's a boy or a girl. And I was disappointed because I thought, because Martin Scorsese has continued to make interesting films, you know, he's advanced in years now and he's still a really interesting filmmaker. Saying that just seemed like, to me, the foolish comment of somebody who should know better. And the comparison that I used, and I invoked your name, Jack, and forgive me for this, I said, if you have any experience of people, and I said, like Jack Howard is a friend of mine, the conversation we had after, because you and I saw Avengers Infinity War in the same cinema, and it didn't strike me as much as it struck you. And I remember we came out of it, it was in
the Cineworld at Leicester Square, and we went round the corner to
Empire,
the pub.
Empire, now referred to as the Cineworld, and we went round the corner to that pub.
Yeah, and then me and my friends were all completely delighted with it, but
also really emotionally engaged,
totally.
And we sat there for maybe an hour and a half, and I felt like the lemon at the party because I was the one going.
But I actually remember hearing your review that you did on the radio, and I thought you reviewed it so fairly.
Oh,
and
thank you.
You weren't like, you know, because it wasn't for you, you weren't like dismissive of it. you were just like, there's clearly a huge audience for this. I can see where they would find it interesting. But for me, it's just not, I'm not the audience for it. And I think that that's an amazing thing to be able to do, because I think the instinct is to go, what was that about? Like, the same way that Scorsese's doing it now, it makes him sound like an old man.
Yeah. Well, so we'll move on to Coppola in a minute. But so your initial reactions to that Scorsese comment, what does that make you think?
I remember seeing James Gunn do a message on Twitter and Instagram about it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm upset about this. It's a shame that one of my heroes can't appreciate what I do now in the same way that people were upset with Westerns back in the day, and now Westerns were taking over cinema.
Yeah.
So I just empathise with the directors of those movies who clearly try and put, especially the ones like James Gunn or like Taika Waititi, who try and put some of themselves into it. Even Joss Whedon tweeted saying, there's a reason why there's a line in the first Avengers, my secret is I'm always angry. He's like, that comes from a real place of humanity and something I'm struggling with, and I'm putting it into a movie of this size. It's a shame that Scorsese can't recognise that stuff, even if he doesn't like it, to go, I can see that it has its place in the world. My favourite response, though, I'm in a comedy duo called Jack and Dean, and my...
No, you really? You never mentioned it before.
Shut up. And my comedy partner, Dean, he tweeted just the picture of Martin Scorsese playing the fish in Shark Tale.
Cause I like you. I'm going to give you 24 hours to pay up.
All of it? How am I supposed to do that?
That's your problem. Bring my 5,000 clams to the racetrack tomorrow or else.
That's a bit of a double standard.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not cinema, and then you were in Shark Tale basically playing a version of yourself as a fish. It's a bit funny.
I also think it seems really weird, and I'll go back to this comparison about, you know, dads and pop music, because I'm at a point in my life now when I have a son who is of an age in which he listens to music that literally sounds to me like somebody is demolishing the house next door, okay? And he thinks it's brilliant, and I'm sure it is brilliant. I can't hear it. I mean, if I try, I can find something, but I can't hear it because it's not. You know, I'm an old fart, and I grew up on, you know, rockabilly and skiffle, and which incidentally was considered to be disgusting and disgraceful by the generation before that. But what I think is that my dad didn't like the music that I was playing. The difference was that back then it was considered to be perfectly fine for them to go, stop playing that awful music.
Yeah,
because
nowadays
you realise that it's not a matter of being down with the kids. It's a matter of accepting that the way they're hearing something is not the way you're hearing it. I remember once I had a conversation with Larry Clark, who had made Kids, which is a film I hate. I know other people defend Kids and are fans of Harmony Korine's scripts. I think everything you need to know about Harmony Korine is his name. He's called Harmony Korine. And I said to Larry Clark once, look, you know, you've made this film about, you know, young kids, and yet you're like, you're an old guy. Yeah. How do you think that you have the... And he said, well, you know, I'm very down with the kids. And I said, well, what do you mean? He went, well, you know, like I go skateboarding with my son's pals. And I thought, yeah, that's... And in a nutshell, that's exactly
We've talked about skateboarding on here
yeah,
before.
Yeah, yeah, right. You go skateboarding with... It's not a matter of being, oh, yeah, I'm down with them. I get the same thing. It's a matter of understanding that every generation has different things that they hear and see, and you said it best when you said, if you've grown up with the Avengers movies,
yeah,
the emotional investment.
Well,
in
it's not even just that. It's the fact that I grew up before there were movies about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you're actually at the upper yeah. sort of almost too old to be representing.
Totally, yeah. Yeah. Like so there's a difference, obviously, of about 5 or 6 years with the fact that my first superhero movies were like X-Men and the first Spider-Man trilogy, yeah. and then eventually Nolan's Batman. And those were the movies that I hold up as, like, especially Nolan's Batman, especially The Dark Knight, obviously, as that's what movies are. And then in 2008, the same year as The Dark Knight, Iron Man happened, and then a whole shift happened in cinema where they were like, we're going to have an interconnected universe. And even Spider-Man Far From Home, which came out earlier this year, I'm not a big fan of that movie. I watched it the first time and was enamoured with it because I just go into the magic and I'm like, there's Spider-Man on screen. I can't believe I'm seeing this still. And
it's good Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man that we like.
Yeah, but then I rewatch it and I go, oh, there's a lot of problems here. Oh, that's clunky. Oh, that's weird. Why have they done that? Oh, this is taking ages. This is a bit boring. Like, have a different perspective, especially with Spider-Man the second time I watch it. But the thing that stands out to me still is that Mysterio is in a Hollywood movie played by Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm like, what world are we living in? No one had heard of Mysterio when I was growing up. He was just like a weird cartoon character and a weird comic book villain that everyone was like, there's no way you'll ever see him on the big screen. And now we have it, and it's Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, it just seems like such a shift in my lifetime from what I thought was possible and now is possible.
Imagine what I felt like going to the Barnett Odeon to see Howard the Duck the first time down. It was like, what?
You know,
for all the things that may be wrong with Howard the Duck, it was just, it's Howard the Duck. And I was very good friends with Tim Polkett, who's a huge comic books fan, and his reaction was exactly the same. It's Howard the Duck. And everyone was going, well, it looks like a guy dressed up as a duck. It's Howard the Duck.
What did you think of the end of the credits of Guardians of the Galaxy?
I laughed.
Was it volume one or volume two?
The one when it's Howard.
With Howard the Duck,
wizened and alcoholic
terrible. He's just there. And I was like, I can't believe... I mean, all right, sure.
Exactly.
What do you let it lick you like that for? Gross. Yeah. Your burn's going down.
If we're agreed that there is a fundamental problem with older filmmakers just dismissing stuff, which is, whether you like it or not, isn't the point, because, I have reservations and I know you're more enthusiastic. So this is what Coppola said. Speaking to journalists in Lyon, I'm reading this from the Guardian article, following his acceptance of the Prix Lumière for his contribution to cinema. Contribution to cinema awards are the things that they give you when you stop doing anything, fine.
You can stop now.
It's okay. We don't need another version of Apocalypse Now. You know what? Honestly, it was fine the first time. Francis Ford Coppola, 80, said, when Martin Scorsese says that Marvel Pictures are not cinema, he's right. Because we expect to learn something from cinema. We expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. Coppola continued, I don't know that anyone gets anything out of seeing the same movie over and over again. Martin was kind when he said it's not cinema. He didn't say it's despicable, which I just say it is.
Despicable's a big word, isn't it?
Well, despicable is a big word at the end of two paragraphs of hooey. So let's take this apart bit by bit. Firstly, we expect to learn something from cinema. We expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration.
Coming from the guy who made Jack.
And incidentally, I would, and also coming from somebody who owes a huge amount to exploitation cinema, let's begin by, this is a hypothetical question, okay? And I mean it hypothetically.
Okay.
Is pornography cinema?
My instinct is to say no.
Okay. My instinct is to say, under certain circumstances, for example, Deep Throat, which I made a documentary about, is a deeply problematic film because the circumstances under which it was made were horrible. Linda Lovelace was hideously abused by her horrible...
There was a movie about it recently, wasn't there?
Yeah, which didn't even scratch the surface.
No.
I mean, I made a documentary which I'm very proud of called The Real Linda Lovelace for Channel 4. And it was a horrible thing, okay? But it was, if you're writing a history of cinema in the 1970s, to ignore Deep Throat is to conveniently ignore something which you don't want to exist.
Yeah, it's to sort of like sidestep history a little bit.
You might not like it, and of course it became a very big part of the feminist anti-pornography movement because Linda Lovelace subsequently recanted. Originally she was put up as the great kind of poster girl for pornography, and she subsequently recanted and then told the stories about what had happened to her, under Chuck Traynor's ownership, it basically came down to. And she had been horribly abused. There is then a discussion in the documentary that I made, called Inside Linda Lovelace, about there is an argument that actually the film ended up saving her life because it made her famous, which meant that Chuck Traynor couldn't just carry on beating her up as he had clearly been doing for years. I mean, I interviewed Andrea Dworkin about it, and Andrea Dworkin said, he was a pimp. That is what he was. You can't think of him as anything other than a pimp. And we interviewed Gloria Steinem and a number of, really, really leading, feminist academics, all of whom had exactly the same opinion of Chuck Traynor and of what happened. But all of whom also conceded that there was an outside chance that, ironically, her coming into the public spotlight had prevented her from becoming
something worse
exactly.
And I think that's a really interesting point, because bringing that up and that taking place in the 70s, that shows me the change in cinema, because now I wouldn't say that pornography is considered cinema, but maybe in the 70s it was, Francis Ford Coppola, and now cinema has changed and developed into something else where that's not appropriate. In fact, it's the exact opposite of that, where Marvel are trying their best, you know, they're under the mouse house, so they're doing all they can to sort of get more interesting, different voices and protagonists on screen in a way that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And it's weird that we haven't, but the fact that Captain Marvel and Black Panther have existed in the last 2 years is astounding and also incredibly brilliant of them to be able to do that.
It's also significant that of those 70s, when Deep Throat was in cinemas in the 70s, it was very hip to embrace it. So some of the people, you know, Jack Nicholson and, you know, all these directors would go along. There's an interview with William Friedkin around the time The Exorcist was out in cinemas, and he said, you know, I have no problem with pornography. There was a very famous article in which Nora Ephron said not to have seen Deep Throat in the 70s was seen as somehow culturally derelict of you. You know, it was part of the... Because you didn't say it was...
About this sort of sexual opening
Now we're
all comfortable with it.
And now we all know all the things about it, but the point is to say it isn't cinema is just because it is cinema. Mm-hmm. It may be the kind of cinema that you think is terrible and repulsive and wrong, although at the time it was held up.
You might go, I'd prefer that we didn't think
that, but at the time it had a lot of hip cultural cachet, and the whole point about it was, the reason it became a sensation was because it was on the front page of newspapers, and exactly these people from the, you know, 1970s hip counterculture directors were going along to see it. So that's an extreme example, but it's a way of saying you can't start saying things aren't cinema just because you don't like them.
Correct.
Also, so the first thing is, we expect to learn something from cinema, we expect to gain something, some enlightenment. The obscenity case with Deep Throat ended up arguing that it didn't have any value other than titillation, therefore it was obscene, at least in one state. Mm-hmm. I don't agree that you have to learn something from cinema to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. I don't think that's true.
No, neither do I.
Who laid down that rule that that's what cinema has to do? I mean, I think, you know, if movies are there to scare you or to, you know, make you laugh or whatever, and one could draw a comparison between that and the 50 Shades movies.
Yeah.
And say, okay,
I don't like them.
Well, I think they're trash.
Yeah.
But the fact is, they're still cinema, mm-hmm. and there is a whole audience for them who are getting something out of them that I'm not getting out of
them. Totally. Like, I don't need to approve of the fact that, like, the whole journey of those movies are Twilight happened, the movies happened, somebody wrote a book that's fan fiction of Twilight, changed the names, they got adapted into movies, and now they have, you know, millions of dollars that they've earned.
Yeah.
I don't like that process. I don't like the fact that happened. I think it's a bit gross, but doesn't mean I'm going to... I just don't need to go see them.
Yeah, but also... But industrially, Jack, it's interesting that the first 50 Shades movie was written, produced and directed by a woman.
Yes.
And therefore became an industrial point at the time that the industry was starting to change. And also, so essentially, we're agreed that you don't have to learn something to gain something, enlightenment, knowledge, inspiration.
I would say that some of the superhero movies
Exactly. Okay, I'm literally just working from building. Okay. So firstly, first point, that's not right. But even if you accept that it is right, I would say that you have gained something, learned something, enlightenment, knowledge, inspiration from exactly the movies that are being talked about.
I totally have, yeah. And not only that, I would say that even outside of myself, seeing the stuff that gets shared these days of kids dressing up as Black Panther and Captain Marvel and all these representation matters posts are incredibly inspiring and wouldn't exist without the films. So I think that there's a knock-on effect that clearly exists in a way that we haven't seen before in cinema, because we've never seen this type of response from children outside of white guys usually, and now you see instead of girls dressing up as princesses, which also would still be fine, they want to dress up as, even if they want to dress up as Spider-Man, who cares, but like they have superheroes to look at now, like Wonder Woman, like Captain Marvel, like Black Widow. It's all and for people of color as well, they have their ones in cinema as well that they can look at and go, there I am on screen. So I think that it's an incredibly positive thing that in this quote and in this version in his head, Francis Ford Coppola is just ignoring entirely or isn't aware of, and therefore shouldn't be speaking to the point As somebody who knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to movies. He knows how to make movies, clearly. But he doesn't seem to have an awareness of what cinema at the moment is for an audience and what that means to people.
Nor indeed how cinema is changing, because in that universe that he's talking about, we've had women directing blockbusters, we've had African-American directors directing blockbusters, we've had female composers composing blockbusters. And I know everyone says, well, yeah, that shouldn't be. The point is, that is an industrial change, and that industrial change is happening through those movies. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how cynical you may feel that is. Incidentally, I don't think it is. I think it's, you know, it's just a practical change. But the industry is changing as a result of those movies existing. And I mean, I'm underplaying my own response to them, because I loved Black Panther. I mean, I really just liked it as a movie. And I think that, you know, I did get something out of Avengers Infinity War. Endgame I struggled with a little bit more, but I think, you know, I think everyone had certain issues with that. But I have, you know, the Chris Nolan movies, I was just knocked out by. I think that, you know, the Batman Begins is, you and I have already debated this, I think is a great masterpiece of a modern movie. I remember coming out of it and saying to Nigel Floyd, my great friend, you know, how did they make an art house movie that was that big? Because that's essentially what they've done. Okay, so to go
and
on
the,
with...
And the same with... That's the reason why I love Nolan's Batman, especially The Dark Knight, is because he's gone, I'm going to make a crime movie that just happens to have Batman in it. And I think that that is what is happening in cinema now as well, is that Marvel movies now are taking that same approach of, we're going to make a comedy, we're going to make a sci-fi, we're going to make a, you know, an action movie and just put Captain America in it, or we're just going to put Ant-Man in it. Yeah. And I think that that is an interesting approach for a multi-shared universe, is to go, we're going to make different genres for this big, wide universe. And it's nice to know that, like, I'm going into each movie and I know what I'm getting in terms of, like, a colour palette, because, yeah, they do all look the same. And I think that if I was going to critique the Marvel movies, I'd say that there is some... there's a struggle that they clearly have with allowing directors to put their own visual flair on stuff or their own voice into it. Mm. All the cinematography is very box standard, similar. They cover things on several cameras rather than thinking, how are we going to make this sequence interesting, or how are we going to make it memorable? There's, like, a cookie-cutter way of making movies. But also, there are many, many positives about the movies that I could go on about for this entire podcast, which we won't. But there are things to criticise, and I think he's going for the wrong stuff.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so how about this? He goes on to say, firstly, I don't know that anyone gets anything out of seeing the same movie over and over again. So that's an assumption that all these movies, this genre of movies, is the same over and over again. And whenever I hear that, I hear someone telling me that all horror movies are the same. Mm-hmm. I hear someone telling me that all rockabilly records are the same. Mm-hmm. I hear someone telling me that all superhero movies are the same. And they're not.
Nope.
They are demonstrably not, and I think it's idiotic to claim that they are. Now, interestingly enough, somebody said to me the phrase that was used by Scorsese about, he said, they're not cinema, they're like fairground rides, okay? And they said, well, you wrote about this in a book that you to me. You wrote about this in a book, in Good and Bad and the Multiplex. You accused the Pirates of the Caribbean movies as being fairground rides rather than movies. So, you know, how can you... And to which my point is, yeah... But that didn't make them not cinema. What made them not cinema is that I don't think they're any good.
Yeah, right.
And there are enough fairground ride movies. I mean, one could argue that the James Bond movies are fairground rides.
That's the same movie over and over again.
Yeah.
You're getting.
But there are good ones and there are bad ones. Yeah. There's Honor Majesty's Secret Service and there's, you know, The Man with the Golden Gun. They're not the same movie.
Yeah.
And there's Skyfall and there's Spectre, which are not the same movie.
There's Casino Royale and then there's Question of Sport.
Or there's Casino Royale. And there's the other Casino Royale, and they're not the same. They're not the same film.
But it goes to what I was saying before. There's a checklist of, like, Okay, Bond, cars, girls, action scenes, guns, explosions.
Foreign territories.
Yeah, you know, world trotting, like globe trotting. There's a checklist of stuff that you expect to see in a Bond movie that they may subvert or not. And the same goes for superhero movies, especially origin stories. Like, there's the same, you know what you're getting when you get a Batman movie or whatever. That's why Joker was kind of interesting, is because it was a different viewpoint on something we'd seen over and over again of Batman's parents getting killed. Oh, what if we saw it from this perspective, or we saw the reasoning in this way? What if Batman's parents didn't get killed at the beginning of the movie? What if they got killed at the end of the movie? One interesting way of looking at something that we all know so well. It's almost like looking at an urban myth in a different way. And there is, there's a checklist of stuff for superhero movies, but it doesn't mean that they're the same thing over and over again. It doesn't mean that it's the same story or the same theme or the same, it doesn't mean that it's the same movie.
No.
It doesn't mean that.
Well, you know, again, I would make a musical comparison, which is that, you know, I play in a band that basically play rockabilly, and rockabilly is essentially the same three chords. I mean, you know, there are passing chords, but it's essentially the same three chords. But the whole point about what I think is interesting about blues music is it's a way of making every version of the same three chords different. So it's a way of taking, like, yes, okay, fine, E, A, D, fine, you can play most of the, but it's what each individual song does with that makes it interesting. Equally, there's the old maxim about Roger Corman, to whom, of course, you know, Coppola owes a debt, which is that Roger Corman's rule used to be, it has to be 89 minutes long, no longer. It has to have a scene in a strip club, and it has to have an exploding helicopter. Beyond that, do what you want. And it's a joke about, you know, Corman making cookie cutters. But as Corman himself said, if you want to make a brilliant director, get somebody who wants to be, you know, the next Truffaut or the next Godard, and get them to make Carnosaur 2, because that's how they discover how to work. You give them a very, very confined... People often learn and do brilliant work within the confines of an exploitation movie.
Attention all personnel. Evacuation crew is on the surface. Proceed to emergency exits.
Angrier, deadlier, hungrier. Carnosaur 2. Extinction is a thing of the past.
I think just putting people in a box in general, limiting their resources, makes them think more creatively.
Yeah, and say, do something interesting with that.
Which is why I think that blockbuster filmmaking sometimes isn't as interesting as it could be, because sometimes they go, oh, can we do that thing? Of course we can, we've got CGI. Like, it's that type of behaviour in cinema at the moment that I have a problem with. So when people do something more interesting, like when Nolan builds a hallway that spins around instead of doing that on green screen, or in the same way he sends people to space without using a green screen, that's interesting filmmaking on a large scale. But like Captain Marvel, I really, really enjoyed until the third act, which turns into Marvel Fair of fly around, smashy, smashy, pow, pow, and I was like, oh, I'm bored now. Yeah. Like, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
That's when I think that the reins get taken away from interesting filmmakers. But before that, and we talked about this before, that movie felt to me like a homage to 90s action like Terminator 2. It was on the ground, like, the geography of the action was really interesting. The train, the car, like, it felt like a proper action movie.
Yeah.
And then it becomes Marvel, I've seen this before stuff. So I'm not saying that there aren't criticisms to be made of movies on that scale. I'm just saying that they're looking in the wrong place. Because I rewatched The Last Jedi recently, and there's a lot of hate about The Last Jedi. I don't know if you know about that.
I heard. You know, I did an on-stage with Rian Johnson for Knives Out, and I asked him about, and he said, you know, it's was still the happiest experience of my life. He said,
really?
I loved it. He said, I couldn't believe I was part of the Star Wars universe. He has no bitterness towards
it. I doubt that he ever would even consider that as a problem.
But it's incredible.
I rewatched The Last Jedi recently, and I was like, this is a really, really good movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I think my prediction would be that over time people are going to accept that film as, like, the way that people look at Empire Strikes Back. But I think that it's the Casino Royale of Star Wars. I think what he's done is he's taken ideas, he's taken characters, and he's thrown them together and to make his own movie that happens to star Star Wars characters. And he's made a film about something, and they're going through something, and they're experiencing
that happens to be a Star Wars
that
movie.
Happens to be a Star Wars movie, the same way that Casino Royale just happens to star James Bond.
Yeah.
And
no, I think that's a very good point.
It's really, really interesting, and I love that he after, you know, still being a relatively green director, he's done some interesting and some great movies, yeah. but he was allowed the reins to do something that interesting. And I wish that Marvel allowed their directors to have that same flair, which is why I think that people responded so positively to Thor Ragnarok. And I have my problems with Thor Ragnarok because I think that the dialogue scenes are boring in terms of the way that they're shot. It's like two close-ups and a wide, and they're on sticks, and there's no interesting blocking. Right. He doesn't know how to direct a scene the way that I think, like, you know, you look at
the
Spielberg.
Way that you do.
No, no, well, the way that Spielberg directs scenes and the way that people move and it tells you something about who they are, Taika Waititi just puts two people standing in a room. But then you cut to the action scenes and, whoa, the camera's everywhere. And it's like, oh, this feels disjointed in the way that I think some of the Star Wars prequels do.
Yeah.
But I think that the voice of Taika Waititi gets through so much, like his comedy, his awkwardness, like all that sort of stuff gets through and wins people over.
Yeah.
And so the other stuff doesn't really matter. And I wish more of that was happening. Like, I wish that John Watts was able to be like, this is a John Watts film when you watch Spider-Man Far From Home. But I just see the Marvel machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, again, there are criticisms.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that they're not cinema.
You know, go ahead. Stay here and enslave people for that lunatic. Keep drinking, keep hiding. But me, I choose to run toward my problems and not away from them.
That's what...
Because that's what heroes do.
But that's fine. But I mean, if you look back through the history of cinema, this idea that suddenly the industrialization and mass production of stuff is modern, that's because you don't know anything about the history of cinema. And what's really annoying is we know that Scorsese and Coppola know a huge amount about the history of cinema. We know that they know about the serials of the 30s and 40s. We know that they know about, you know, we know that they
know
this stuff.
Do you know what they sound like? They sound like the people who complain about, like, sequels and remakes.
Yeah.
Like, Scarface wasn't a remake. And it's like those people who, they seem so narrow-minded, like, oh, that's all cinema is these days. It's like, yeah, but guys, that's all it's ever... It's always been a business. It's always been that way.
Okay, but brilliantly, Jack, this leads on to the next point. When he says he didn't say it's despicable, which I just say it is, okay? Now, I was at a talk recently in which Joanna Hogg was there, who I think is a brilliant filmmaker, British independent filmmaker, is just finishing Souvenir 2. I thought Souvenir was great. And the issue came up, and Joanna was great about it. She said, well, I know there's at least one person in the room who disagrees with me, but I agree with Scorsese that it's not cinema. And she said, and the problem is that Marvel is a machine and it's eating the world and it's pushing everything else to the sides. Okay, mm-hmm. So her point was that that it's becoming this homogenous thing. Now, I think there are two things that are relevant about this. Firstly, you have to distinguish between the movies and the place that they occupy in terms of exhibition. So there's the movies and there's exhibition. And I do agree that in terms of multiplex culture, it's disappointing that so much of multiplex culture looks like the same thing and is, you know, and the movies that I find interesting, I'm looking elsewhere. But actually, I don't mind that because I don't go to multiplexes very much. I spend most of my time going to independent cinemas like the Plaza or, you know, because they're showing the movies that I want to see. And I think that's always been the case. Mm-hmm. It's always been the case that distribution is difficult. Everyone knows making a British movie isn't the really complicated thing. Distributing a British movie is the really complicated thing. But we now live in a world in which there are all these different forms of distribution, whether it's streaming or, you know, VOD or, you know, going to see things in different cinemas. My point is, look, you can dislike the Marvel movies. You can dislike the fact that they take up an awful lot of multiplex screens. Embrace art house cinema and let that thrive, because that's the future. That's actually where the interesting stuff is happening.
And it feels like they're complaining that, like, why isn't that popular?
Yeah.
And it's like,
because it's not.
It never has been. There's not a massive audience for it. But if you like it, you can promote it in a positive way.
Yeah.
You don't need to be like, I don't like that thing. You can be like, I like this thing. Why don't you go and see this?
Yeah.
My prime example of that, and it's something that should have been a huge hit, is Booksmart.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of my
fabulous,
favourite films
fabulous.
Of the year. It is absolutely wonderful and so funny and so brilliantly directed by Olivia Wilde. And that, to me, it feels like the, please go see this. Like, yeah. I want to talk about it whenever I get an opportunity to be like, please go see it, please go see it. And I don't go, please go see this, instead of seeing, you know,
that's right,
this.
Yeah.
Like, see both. Like, if you enjoy cinema, you can enjoy a wide variety of stuff.
Well, tangentially connected, I really like mid-90s as well.
I thought it was good.
And again, that made no impact whatsoever, but it doesn't mean it's not brilliant. I think Monos is one of the most exciting films I've seen all year.
I haven't seen that yet.
But it's currently number 18 in the top, because it's playing in a limited number of cinemas. Every year when I get to the end of year list, people say, oh, well, your top five films of the year, none of them are box office blockbusters. Yeah, I know, but if you ask me what the best records of the year were with the time that I was listening to New Records, the Compsat Angels were never chart toppers. But I don't even know
who that is.
No, but that's the point, okay? Of course you don't, because you weren't even born, and they never doesn't mean I don't love them.
Yeah,
and it doesn't mean that I can't champion them at every possibility. And in fact, my feeling is, if you're Martin Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola, you kind of have a duty of care to stop complaining about the ones that and celebrate the things that you do.
I think so too.
How is the world made better by grumpy old men telling us that Marvel movies aren't cinema and are despicable?
Yeah.
How does that improve the
cinema?
Place of, yeah, exactly.
How does that improve cinema? Like, I think you're right. I think the point of all this, the bigger conclusion that I think we both agree on, is that positivity trumps negativity. And the idea that
You could be a politician. You should run for office. You should really hope change. Yeah, that's what, I'd vote for you.
Especially because I said the word Trumps.
Yeah. Well done.
But I think that if he had done an interview and said, they're not for me.
Which is kind of what Scorsese did more.
But then if they'd followed it up by saying,
But
here's something I really enjoy and I'd love to promote this thing or whatever. Like, that would have been so much more. That would have been so much more well accepted. And I hate that it's become this buzzword sort of question for all filmmakers now. What do you think about what Scorsese said? What do you think about Coppola? What do you think about Marvel? Mm. Like, every filmmaker is getting asked that now.
Although I have to say, in doing this podcast, we're contributing to that.
True. Interesting discussion.
Yeah, in the same way that I was contributing to it by just tweeting, dear Martin Scorsese, yes, they are.
Yeah.
Because, it's a... But I did because I actually felt I felt disappointed.
Yeah.
Because I asked Rian Johnson about this in relation to the Star Wars thing. And I said, what about what Scorsese said about Marvel? I just did exactly what you said. And he had a brilliant response. He said, he's Martin Scorsese, he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And which is exactly right. And actually, that positivity that Rian Johnson just exudes from his every pore, when he gets all this flack for making a great Star Wars movie, he goes, yeah, it's great. People care. I'm really interested. That's what, I think part of that is an age thing. I do think you get to a point in your life when you just stop listening to news. I mean, say what you like about Elton John, he still listens to new music, which is astonishing. So I'll bring this back as a final point, back to the 70s, back to where we began. The fact that Joker is a film that is so influenced by the fact that Scorsese was at one point talked about as an executive producer.
Yeah.
And there is a scene in that film in which they're in what's essentially Times Square. It's not Times Square, but it is basically Times Square.
Sure.
And there are billboards for movies like, Zorro the Gay Blade. Mm. But there's also what appear to be sort of porno cinemas.
Yes.
And this is an establishing thing. And it's meant to look like Taxi Driver. It's meant to look like the world that travels.
Is it?
Thank you. No, thank you. I know, but sorry, I'm stating the obvious for dramatic effect, right? If you were in Times Square around that time, one of the other movies that you would only have found in those cinemas was Wes Craven's The Last House on the Left, which was absolutely dismissed by the mainstream as a vile, disgusting piece of filth. We now see it as a really important milestone on the career of Wes Craven, who went on to, redefine what modern horror looked like, whether you like it or not, with Nightmare on Elm Street and all the rest of it.
Here's the first motion picture to offer to the daring a look into the final maddening space between life and death. The Last House on the Left. To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie. Only a movie.
There were enough people back then saying, that's not cinema. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the kind of thing that the Scorsese's and the Coppolas of this world would have been saying, oh, God, have you heard about this underground movie? It's really shocking, but it's really, really interesting. And it depresses me now to hear them take anything that's working for an audience and to say, it's not cinema. And to say it's despicable is just like, just go back to recutting Apocalypse Now. And as you say, you made Jack.
Yeah.
Your Honour, the defence rests.
Yeah.
We
Well, there we are. Thanks for listening to this Kermode on Film podcast. If you've enjoyed it, remember to subscribe and tell your friends. And why not check out our Patreon page for exclusive extra content. Thanks for listening. Keep watching the skies.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.